May it please the court, my name is Sean McDermott. My attorney number is 30132, and I am the attorney charged with representing the appellant SB in this matter. Your Honor, reviewing the lower court's order, the trial court found that there was not a duty owed SB under these circumstances. And the court used an analysis to state that there was no duty under both negligence principles and the Premises Liability Act. Judge McGahee did also indicate that finding a duty under these circumstances would not be in harmony with the Dram Shop Liability Act. With that said, it is my intention to address the Dram Shop Liability Act and why that should not apply in this case, and also why this case should be remanded to the trial court and proceed under both the Premises Liability Act and the common law negligence claim that was asserted.
Pardon me for a moment, Mr. McDermott. Would the bailiff please close the door so that we don't have noise coming in to interrupt? Thank you. Please proceed.
Okay. Your Honor, briefly, as the court knows, in the late night of October 17 and the early morning of October 18, SB went into an establishment, Five Degrees. She was there with her sister, and she was also there with her sister's then boyfriend, who is now her fiance. Admittedly, and we put this in the complaint so that everything was out there in front, so that we could adjudicate everything on the merits. And we fully anticipated that there would be an argument about the apportionment of responsibility on SB's part. We fully anticipated that. We did not anticipate not being able to get that argument in front of a jury and have a jury address this case on its merits. Summary judgment, as this court knows, is about the most drastic remedy that a court can level in a civil case. And I would direct the court's attention to the affidavit that's in the record by James Schottinger, and also his trial testimony that is in the record of James Schottinger. Those pieces of testimony lay out that there was a duty in this case under both negligence principles and the Premises Liability Act. It is a very simple CRE 801 admission by a party opponent, and I direct the court's attention to those pieces of evidence because factually this is a very simple case.
Mr. McDermott, let's drill down here if we can. So first, I had a question about the premises liability claim. Is your claim against the bar, Mr. Gardner, or both? That wasn't very clear.
It's both, Your Honor.
All right. And so what precisely is the injury that occurred on the premises here?
The injury that occurred, and thank you for asking, Your Honor, that is the next thing that I was going to state. The injury that occurred is Miss Beardsley, as it was decided.
Again, I ask you not to use names.
I apologize.
Sorry.
That slipped, Your Honor.
No problem.
SB, sincerely apologize.
No problem.
SB, as was adjudicated in the criminal trial, was unable to apprise her situation. She was unable to consent, and she was carried out of the bar directly in front of Mr. Schottinger.
Or helped out. Let's assume she was carried out. And forgive me for interrupting. Your time is limited, and I have some questions.
That's fine.
There's no question here on premises liability that SB would be an invitee, correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
All right. So let's assume everything you said is absolutely true, which we have to on summary judgment. If there's evidence of it, we have to take that as a given. Somebody helped them out, helped this woman out, or let's even say carried her out. What evidence is there that Mr. Gardner was aware that there was a danger there? Sometimes your friend gets drunk and you carry your friend out too. It seems to me, and push back, but it seems to me in the record it was undisputed that Mr. Gardner saw them laughing and chatting on the patio, whatever. This was a regular. It seems undisputed he had no reason to believe that the perpetrator here had committed any other crimes or was about to. He watched the perpetrator carry this lady out of the bar. Why would that suggest that they had knowledge of danger? What evidence is there that there was knowledge that there was danger to this woman or that a rape was going to happen?
In terms of a rape, Your Honor, I don't expect people to necessarily be able to tell the future, but the fact of the matter is, and James Schottinger testified both in the criminal trial and in his affidavit, he indicated that he was told by the defendant that she was passed out and carried out of the bar.
So what's wrongful about that? Let's assume that's all true. Totally passed out on the floor, and the bouncer watches a guy carry this lady out. And again, seems undisputed. He watched them cavorting in a friendly way. I mean, unfortunately, you know, younger people sometimes get drunk, and their friends carry them out. That doesn't necessarily mean it was a kidnapping. It doesn't necessarily mean anything bad was happening other than a friend is carrying their drunk friend out of a bar. So again, it seems, I think under the invitee standard, you've got to prove that there was some knowledge of a danger here. Where is there evidence as knowledge of a danger just because somebody's carrying a drunk person out of a bar?
The evidence is this, Your Honor. SB was carried out by someone that she did not know.
Well, how does Gardner know that?
The bouncer had a reason to intervene and to know that.
What's the evidence?
He was aware that SB, he said that SB came into the bar. He was aware that SB came separate and was not a part of any group that the person that took SB out of the bar. He admitted that and he knew that. Immediately as the bar is closing and SB's sister and her boyfriend are looking for SB, they go to the bouncer, they go to Mr. Gardner, they go to other members of the establishment, and they say, where is my sister? Where is my sister's friend? Where did she go? We can't find her. We need to find her. And the answer given by Mr. Gardner is, oh, she was passed out on the floor and she was picked up and carried out of the bar. And simply put, Your Honor, and the duty analysis is laid out in the briefs by both the appellant and the appellee, and I simply state, Mr. Gardner is charged with protecting that environment, that establishment. It is his job there to keep the peace, to maintain order, to ensure that someone is safe. SB, it was undisputed, went into the establishment. She was only there for about 30 to 45 minutes. Frankly, Your Honor, the portions of the record that you mentioned, yes, in terms of a discovery deposition, it was not challenged that she was actually friendly with the man who ended up carrying her out. I will tell the court that had this case proceeded to trial, the jury would receive an instruction about how much of a witness's testimony they can believe, some, all, or none. And that recitation by Mr. Gardner would be challenged by the plaintiff.
But you didn't on summary judgment. There was no evidence placed in response to summary judgment that no, they weren't friendly, or no, that he posed some risk because, correct?
Correct. But what we do have on the record that we do have, Your Honor, is that SB was only there for 30 to 40 minutes, that she came in with two friends. It was immediately made known to the establishment and to the named defendant, Mr. Gardner, that something was wrong, that there was a danger.
But that was after she left, right? And she was gone already when they asked where is she. She already got into the Mercedes or whatever the fancy car was they drove off in. So where's causation now? If we want to get to this point, you know, that he was told, you know, that they're desperately looking for her. And that seems to me maybe your argument, which is my next question I was going to ask you, where's the misfeasance here as opposed to nonfeasance? I think you're saying that the folks at the bar were obstreperous and not helpful. And maybe there is evidence of that. That said, she was gone already. How did that cause her injury? Well, they were being jerks, hypothetically, after she was gone.
And, well, I think that's part and parcel of the entire event, Your Honor. And I will back up and I will simply tell the court that my position is that somebody who has been in an establishment, let's assume it's my house, if I have a guest and they come to my house and they've only been there for 30 to 45 minutes and they lose consciousness and then they are brought out, and Mr. Schottinger's testimony is that he wasn't told she was helped along or anything that was modified by the time we took the defendant's deposition. The testimony was she was picked up off of the floor and carried out. And it was also apparent from Mr. Gardner that these were two people who just met each other. Common.
Pardon me, Mr. McDermott.
Yes.
Pardon me for interrupting. Understanding that what happened to SB here was terrible, and it was so bad that two people got convicted of extremely serious crimes. Understanding that, based on the record that we have in this case, what would you have had the bouncer do when he sees that she is being taken from the establishment?
I expect of Mr. Gardner what I would expect of myself or any friend or any other person. I expect him to say, I am the bouncer of this place. It is my job to make sure that everybody is safe. Is she safe? Is she okay? She's lost consciousness. She's been picked up off of the floor. Is she supposed to be going with you?
So aren't you making him now an insurer? And the case is caution against that. It isn't, in your interpretation, the bar becoming an insurer of everybody in the bar. I mean, what the man saw was the lady get carried out and put into a nice car. That would suggest she was safe to a reasonable person, arguably. And so I'm concerned with the line you'd have us draw, that, frankly. Do you really have to ask every single person in the bar, or two folks meet? People go to bars to meet other people. If everybody who leaves bar who just met each other, do you have to inquire of each one of them? Are you okay? That seems to be a pretty drastic line to draw.
If you know or should know that two people just met and that one of them has lost complete consciousness, is getting carried out, yes. My answer is there is a duty for you to inquire and to ensure that that person is safe.
Let me ask another question, counsel. Isn't there some evidence in the record or something in the record that indicates that Mr. Gardner knew something about at least one of the two men who took this young lady out of the bar, and that he thought, or for some reason he termed this young man maybe of a gangster reputation or anything like that?
There is, Your Honor. He indicated that he was familiar with the person, that the person was a regular, that the person who carried SB out of the bar was a regular, and he didn't know much about him, but he did characterize him, and it was a pejorative term, about a gangster type who talked like a gangster, who did certain things like that.
Would that in any way, or should that in any way, raise Mr. Gardner's antenna?
I think in terms of knew or should have known, yes, Your Honor. I think at least that should at least be factored into the equation. And I was.
Did he describe what gangster meant?
When pressed at the deposition, Your Honor, he gave kind of vagaries about the way he talked and his mannerisms and things like that. My impression was that Mr. Gardner, and I think the record kind of reflects this, was being somewhat cautious and not trying to stereotype or be not politically correct when he was giving this description of a gangster type person. With that said, Your Honor, I believe I have 25 seconds and I'd like to reserve for rebuttal.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good Lori Bell, registration 31714 for the appellees. May it please the court, counsel. Appellant in this case is asking this court to impose a duty on defendants to protect her where no legally cognizable duty exists. First and foremost, plaintiff's claims, and I apologize, SB, I'll try to stick with SB. SB's claims are precluded by the Dram Shop Act. She admits that she was voluntarily intoxicated and that but for her intoxication, she would not have left the bar with Mr. Dorrance and Mr. Salas. This fact alone precludes any claims of any nature.
Let me ask you, Ms. Bell, I mean, I beat on Mr. McDermott plenty. I'm an equal opportunity beater on her, I guess. You said in your brief, you make a very strong statement that the Dram Shop Act abolished all common law claims. I think you're now more correctly stating, I mean, I understand it, it abolished common law claims regarding the service of alcohol. And here, what evidence was there that it was the service of alcohol to SB here that caused the injury? You cite Sigmund, but Sigmund, you know, is a case where the guy got drunk and they served him alcohol. He was visibly drunk and then fell down the stairs and hit his head and died. That's very different than a case here where the woman, it seems undisputed, walked into the bar drunk and then left with somebody who raped her. I mean, what does that have to do with what happened to her, to the service of alcohol to her? I think that's quite a bit of a stretch of the Dram Shop Act to say that it's covered by that those facts. But push back, I'm sorry.
I think the core component of the Dram Shop Act is that if someone voluntarily becomes intoxicated, they can't then turn around and sue an alcohol vendor for the for their injuries that they sustain, but for their intoxication.
Have to be relating to the service, that the bar served her and then she got drunk because the bar got her drunk and that caused something. And so that's one issue. And here isn't the problem, it's not anything she did. She certainly didn't ask to get sexually assaulted. That's very different than a guy who gets drunk and falls down the stairs on his own.
And I don't know that it's quite so different. In Sigmund, that it's alleged that he got drunk and because of his intoxication, he fell down the stairs. In this case, SB got drunk and because of her intoxication, she left the bar with someone in 2020 hindsight, she should not have left the bar with. So I think it is analogous to Sigmund. As far as her intoxication, there is no evidence that she was served alcohol while at 5 degrees. She said that she may have received a drink from someone else, but it's not clear that anyone served her while she was there.
All right, so if she walked in drunk, how does the Dram Shop Act apply if I might, and maybe my interpretation is wrong? They didn't serve her at all. She came in drunk and then she left. How does the Dram Shop Act relieve this bar of anything? The Dram Shop Act seems to me, and correct me if this is wrong, they would be liable if they served, you know, the first person liability,
sure.
And she gets drunk, and then she gets hurt because she got drunk. That's one. The other issue is if they serve a third party who harms somebody else, and I don't think there's any evidence that the two perpetrators here, you know, were necessarily drunk. So I mean, I'm
correct.
Troubled.
But I think the legislature also recognized in drafting the Dram Shop Act, they specifically set forth that it's the consumption of alcohol that can be the proximate cause of injuries and not necessarily the sale or service. And that if someone does become intoxicated and they suffer injuries, they are responsible for their injuries, not someone else. But that aside, even if we go around, look past the Dram Shop Act into SB's other claims, including the premises liability, those fail as well. Predominantly with the Premises Liability Act, she alleges that she was, because of her injuries, 5 degrees is responsible, but to maintain a claim under the Premises Liability Act, she has to allege that her injuries occurred while on the property of 5 degrees. And there's simply no evidence that she was injured while she's at 5 degrees. As tragic as her injuries were after the fact, once she left, nothing happened at 5 degrees.
Well, what about, as I understand Mr. McDermott's argument, he's saying she was kidnapped at 5 degrees. Wouldn't that be an injury on the premises?
And that's clearly colorful language, but from the perspective of those at 5 degrees, there was no kidnapping that occurred. Mr. Gardner also testified that, as you recognized earlier, that SB was observed laughing by all outward appearances, having a good time with Mr. Dorrance. There was no reason for Mr. Gardner or anyone else to question her intentions, SB's intentions, or anyone else's intentions as they're having a good time.
Did Mr. Gardner know the name or names of the two perpetrators?
Mr. Salas, he had never met before. As for Mr. Dorrance, I do not believe that he actually knew his name. He was familiar with them. He testified.
He didn't have any information, or what any information he had, there was no duty on his part to give to the people who were trying to find her?
No, he had no information with respect to...
He
did not know a name, no.
Okay.
No. What he did know of Mr. Dorrance was that when he came to the bar, he never caused problems. He treated the staff, the patrons well. He admitted that he'd seen him with various women throughout the time in the bar, but there was never any allegation that he caused any injury to anyone.
But he didn't know his name. Gardner did not know his name.
No, he did not. I
may be mixing up cases. I have a recollection. Didn't he know him his first name? He knew him as Mike, or am I making that up?
He may have known his name as Mike.
Okay.
And to their credit, in the bar completely cooperated with the police and provided every information that they had. This was just not perceived as an incident at the time it occurred. When you look at the record, there's just nothing that clicked that it would be an issue. Even SB's companions didn't treat her SB's intoxication as a dangerous condition or cause them to accept the duty to protect her. They let her go off and dance on her own. They didn't question her intentions when she left with another man to socialize. They didn't follow her to the back of the bar. They didn't even call the police once they could not locate her. So I think that the actions of her companions underscores...
Who did call the police?
The police were not called until the next day. When SB awoke, it was not clear of where she was located. I believe she called her sister at that time, and then her sister called the police. So there was just no activity taking place at the time this occurred. It was simply another patron who'd lost a companion, which was not uncommon.
Pardon me for interrupting, Ms. Bell, but to go back to a question that Judge Daly asked Mr. McDermott, could you provide me with some detail about what the reference to Mr. Dorrance as being gang-like or have a gangster appearance? What specifics were provided about that?
I believe Mr. Gardner, when pressed for information during his deposition, he testified that he just had a sense, and I believe, and I'm a little bit naive on this, that there's a special shaving of the hair and the sideburns. I'm not exactly sure what it was, and I didn't completely understand it. But Mr. Gardner did testify that there was something about his haircut and that he would occasionally wear his hat backwards that gave him the impression that he was a gangster type. There was no indication that he...
Was there any indication that he... Mr. Gardner was aware that he had participated in any criminal activity or had urged any criminal activity or anything like that?
Absolutely not. None whatsoever. And getting on to what SB seems to be proposing is that in her case, that the bar owed her some specific duty to protect her and to foresee that harm was going to occur. As it appears that the court has recognized, there just wasn't any evidence that there would be a duty on the part of the bar. And to impose a duty on the bar would just be a tremendous undertaking. And the bars can't be expected to have people sign in and sign out when they come to the establishment and identify who they're with. They can't be expected to run background checks on people and determine, well, are they acceptable clientele? They can't stop someone from leaving with someone they want to, which is what SB is proposing that should have been done in this case.
Well, as I understand it, the evidence was that she was unconscious, so there's no indication that she wanted to leave, was there?
Actually, according to Mr. Gardner, he clarified during his deposition that when he testified that she was carried out of the bar, he described it as being analogous to an injured player being carried off the field. He acknowledged that Mr. Dorrance was definitely supporting SB, but not that he didn't pick her up and carry her around as she would a child.
What was the record on whether or not she was unconscious?
In the civil case, there was no record that she was unconscious. SB testified that she has no recollection of any activity once she entered 5 degrees, and she admits that she doesn't know if she advised anyone that she didn't want to leave with Mr. Dorrance or if she gave anyone the impression she didn't want to leave with Mr. Dorrance. And she admitted that there was no reason for 5 degrees to know that what the criminal intentions would be of Mr. Dorrance and Mr. Salas. No one had any way of foreseeing what would happen.
Let me give you a hypothetical, if I can, Ms. Bellin, or really just to respond. I was pushing Mr. McDermott some, and I think that he kind of narrowed where he thought the duty was. And as I understood it, and he'll correct me in his 25 seconds when he gets back up, that if somebody is unconscious, I recognize you say this is not the facts, but you know this case involves some line drawing. Let's say you have that fact, see somebody totally passed out on the ground, and the bouncer is aware they just met, and he sees some man carry her out. Let's take that hypothetical. He knows he's not seeing the man together with this woman, and watches some strange man come and carry her out. Would there be a duty in that circumstance?
I think there's a lot of assumptions made in your question. In this case in particular, while Mr. Gardner testified, he knew that he presumed that she recently entered the bar. He had no knowledge of if they had met and they'd known each other in the past or not.
Yeah, let me be clear. I'm intentionally asking a hypothetical. I recognize you strongly disagree with those facts, but I'm trying to figure out where you think a duty would be. Take that hypothetical. Ladies, passes out dead drunk. Stranger walks up to her and carries her out. Would the bar have a duty in that circumstance?
I do not know that the bar would have a duty, but from the perspective of who's taken her out, although I would certainly hope that they would question the intentions of the person who's walking up, merely from the standpoint that they had not seen him conversing, they had not seen any interaction between the two earlier in the night or at any time, I think it would be prudent of the bar to inquire. I don't know what kind of answer you're going to get at that standpoint, and maybe it might be a question if that's the time where you involve the authorities. In this case, I think there's the interpretation of the word carry is being used in different respects, but it is still undisputed that Mr. Dorrance and SB were socializing prior to leaving the bar, which would, by all outward appearances, lead the defendants to believe that she was okay. She was with who she wanted to be. But you could also take that those facts and change the people involved. It could have been Mr. Schottinger that walked into the back and danced with SB, and he could have been the one that carried her out. Mr. Gardner would have no way of knowing that Mr. Schottinger was the person who actually entered the bar with SB, and if she was truly intoxicated to the point that she didn't know what was going on, Mr. Gardner would have no way of knowing if she was with the correct person. He can't differentiate between the intentions of Mr. Dorrance or Mr. Salas or Mr. Schottinger or anyone else for that matter. And it's not the obligation of the bar to be the moral compass of the folks who enter. And granted, SB was not intending to leave with someone and disappear and leave her friends, but that's essentially what we'd be asking a bar to do if we were going to try to prevent them from leaving with someone they just met.
I know we've got only a minute and 20 seconds. I apologize. Well, I should apologize to both of you for monopolizing your time. I want to ask you quickly about the negligence claim. The first argument you make in your brief is that the premises liability statute bars the negligence claim. And it just strikes me as that's trying to have it both ways. You first say that this is premises liability fails because this happened off premises. Assuming you're right about that, then don't we have a negligence claim? How does the premises liability premises liability statute bar the negligence claim when your position is the premises liability statute doesn't apply?
If the premises liability statute did in fact apply, it would operate to bar a negligence claim because it would be the exclusive remedy.
But if it doesn't, then we have to look at the question of duty under the common law negligence, correct?
Correct. And in this case, there was just simply no duty on the part of 5 degrees to take action to prevent the harm to the plaintiff. And given the facts of the case, we would just ask that this court affirm the lower court's grant of summary judgment. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. McDermott, you got 22 seconds.
Your Honor, I would just also note Mr. Dorrance was receiving special privileges. This was a special exit that the bouncer permitted him to go through. My position is that the premises liability occurs. An F4 kidnap did occur. That's consistent with what happened in the criminal court. When she was brought off the premises, it escalated into a class 2 felony when she was sexually assaulted, and that's why I'm asking for negligence to go forward as well.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I thank both counsel for their arguments in this case. This case will stand submitted, and an opinion will issue in due course. This concludes our docket for today. Counsel, please journey safely home.